You know, we're curious if you invest in women in the same way that men are invested in, especially in sports, can you get the same results not only on the pitch or on the field of play, but also on the business side?
The level of investment in every way here is higher than most of the teams in the league.
Our ownership group, our motto was kind of, let's prove them wrong. Let's prove them that we can invest these kind of dollars and get the results. What I really love is the staff, independent to us, came back and their mission statement is to prove them right.
I think you're going to see a team that, first of all, is excited to play, respects the moment. You're going to see a team that's well-balanced, well-coached.
This is the ProCo 360 podcast for people who love Colorado and love hearing from Colorado's great entrepreneurs, entrepreneurs who are doing something special, something that drives my curiosity. I'm Dave Tabor, host of ProCo 360. I'm a former Colorado Tech entrepreneur, and I love having these conversations and sharing them with you. I'm in the studio today with Rob Cohen, CEO of IMA Financial Group and owner of the new Denver Summit Football Club of the National Women's Soccer League. Also in studio is Kirk Johnson, general manager of the club. This is going to be great. I mean, there has been so much hype, so much in the news about the Denver Summit. That Rob and the ownership team had been selected for the expansion of the NWSL, then about a new stadium, then, I mean, the reporting of massive ticket sales that are setting records, really. So that's cool. We're going to be talking all things club ownership and women's professional sports. Rob and Kurt, welcome to ProCo 360.
Thanks, Dave. Great to be here with you.
Thank you so much.
I'm glad you are. This is so fun. I mean, the news has been spectacular around what you're doing. Rob, what's the backstory?
Yeah, well, this all started with a group called the Ford Denver Football Club, and they were entertaining watch parties and bringing people together, all with the idea to build some excitement around going after an expansion franchise. And I got introduced to that group and went and attended one of their events, and I was kind of blown away when I went in and I saw the number of people that were there, the passion that they had, their knowledge of the game, etc., and just leaned in to start helping, and then quickly realized that my experience through the Sports Commission and other things I had done that have been about bids and winning bids, that I could bring something to the table, and the rest is history.
Well, it's starting to be history, but I mean, I think of this venture, and I think, like, is this like your biggest, what the hell, I'm just going to do it, or is this actually designed to be like a business venture?
It's both. So, you know, when you align your passions with business, that's where you usually find the greatest success. And so, for me, I've always had passion around sports. I've always wanted to find something that could give back to the community, because this community has been amazing to me and my family. And then when you couple that with the empowerment of people, in this case, the empowerment of women, those are three things that are just aligned with my personal values and my passions, and you put that together with a good business plan and good partners, and off you go.
Yeah, where did the passion around empowering women come from?
Well, it was just always, you know, as I said, wanting to find ways to give back. But when I kind of dug into what's going on with women's sports right now, and, you know, part of the hypothesis that the ownership group has is that, you know, we're curious if you invest in women in the same way that men are invested in, especially in sports, can you get the same results not only on the pitch or on the field of play, but also on the business side?
Yeah. Because, Kurt, I mean, it's, I think there's always been this disparity. And it's a question of, you know, which comes first, you know, the chicken or the egg. When you invest in women's sports, do you start to get the interest and the response, or is that not going to happen? I think people are still wondering.
Well, I think the history is very limited in the equal investment phase.
Yeah.
And so what we're finding is when you check all the boxes of a world-class organization, you get a return. And the early returns are really positive here.
What are the boxes?
Well, I think it's great ownership. Great.
Well, Rob's right here. Yeah.
Great. And but that's serious, you know. Uh-huh. A diverse and connected ownership group in the community, a great marketplace, facility building, investment in your organization, meaning your staff, And great marketing. Yeah. You know, I think those are some of them.
Yeah.
The list goes on.
I'm sure. But I mean, it's, I guess what you would contend is that women's sports hasn't had the boxes checked consistently in the past.
Absolutely.
You both agree?
Absolutely.
Wow. Okay. We're going to talk about that. And in fact, I do want to jump right into the finances of this thing, because I think everybody I talk to, and I told people that I'm going to be doing this interview, like, how does it work? Like, what are the finances, and how do you like buy a team and start a team and all that? So I want to start. How do you buy a team?
Well, there's two ways to buy a team. One, you can buy an existing team,
right,
and either own it in the market that it's in, and or try to relocate it, which is challenging, or you can bid on an expansion franchise. In our case, we bid on an expansion franchise. They had run a process before ours where they intended to bring in two teams. Make a long story short, they brought in three because they had three great cities that wanted to step up. So they wanted to bring in a fourth team to even out so that there are 16 teams, because you play each team twice.
Yeah.
In our case, there were 19 cities that were bidding for one slot.
Wow.
And so it was a very competitive process in terms of, you know, going through and filing the paperwork, et cetera. And then we got narrowed down to a semifinalist. There were six semifinalists and then ultimately three finalists. And then we won.
That's amazing that there were 19 cities that wanted a women's professional soccer team. And in a time when, you know, I think most people who are casual observers think women's sports, you know, is such a secondary product. How are we thinking wrong about that?
Well, I mean, Kurt can probably talk about this better than I can. The quality of the play, when you're up close to these athletes, they are professional elite athletes by any standard or measure that you look at. And I think when people start to understand their commitment to sport, understand what they're doing and their passion around it, and you know, the quality of the product. And in our case, the NWSL is the best women's league in the world with the best players playing in it. And the U.S. national team is obviously one of the best in the world, you know, having won nine World Cups and or Olympic gold medals over that period of time. That's more than any other nations all combined.
Yeah. I think I'll just add, we have four, five, six decades now of youth participation in soccer in our country, in particular here in Denver. And it's a boys and girls sport. So there are many, many hundreds of thousands of families out there that have a female, a mom who played the game, and or a dad that played the game.
So do you think the generational momentum is starting to also drive some of this demand?
I think it's driving soccer at all levels.
Wow, yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
All right, I got to ask you this.
Okay. And if you look at it, I'll just add something. So if you look at the stats, so, you know, there are now 80 million plus soccer fans in the United States. 63% of them have become soccer or football fans in the last 10 years.
Wow.
So that tells you of the acceleration of the sport here in the United States.
So that's really a demand curve for you.
Right. And
yeah,
it's been the world's game forever, but it's now becoming the U.S.'s game as well.
That's interesting. All right, I got to ask you this, and you just have to answer it. What does it cost to get selected? Like, you have to pay the league to have a team. What's it cost?
Yeah. Well, you got to, as Kurt said, it's not only about the money, but you do have to pay an expansion fee.
Yeah.
So in our case, you can read about what the expansion fee is. I am required by the non-disclosure agreement with the league to not say
what it is. Okay.
So, but you can read the public dollar amount that has been out there.
All right. I'm going to put that in the show notes.
Yeah, that's totally fine.
I'm find it.
Yeah. I'm just not going to violate my agreement.
Fair enough. And then you got to recruit the team, you got to build a stadium, and in your case, you got to build a stadium and then build another stadium. How does that work?
Yeah, not well, but it was part of the requirement from the league was that they, because part of the issue is that, you know, typically women teams share facilities with the men's team, and what happens is the men's team gets the revenue model off that, but they also get the scheduling priority.
Wow, that sucks for you.
Right, and so one of the things the league really wanted is for us to control our own revenue model and to control the scheduling that goes with it. And so that's where the temporary stadium came. It seemed to be a financial burden, and that's why we ended up cutting this partnership with Cherry Creek School Districts, because we found out they were going to build a stadium. We needed to build a temporary stadium. We said, why don't we do it together? We'll use it for our temp stadium. Then when we're done with it, we'll turn it over to you. You'll pay less, we'll pay less, and everybody wins.
I didn't know that was the arrangement. How creative is that?
It's
good for you.
Very, very creative to solve the problem that the league put in front of us.
That's cool. Okay, Kurt, what is it? How does the payroll work? For players, I mean, obviously you've got staff and all that too, but there's all this noise in men's professional sports about salary caps and all that kind of stuff. Like, does that exist in the NWSL?
It does. We have a salary cap. We have additional mechanisms to recruit players, such as allocation money and transfer money. So, in essence, an expansion team has some different additional resources. The simplest way to look at it is a higher salary cap, but that's not the fully accurate way
net,
to
that's the net
over a short period of time
to help you get going. There's a lot of talk, of course, in college sports about NIL, but NIL isn't just college, it's pros. Anybody can make get paid for their name, image, likeness, commercial appearances and so forth. Are you seeing quite a bit of that already getting traction in Colorado?
Absolutely.
I would
you know, it's
so.
One of the differentiating factors in our market and other markets in NWSL is I believe we're going to have more players that are going to be able to do third-party separate deals with local companies.
Why do you think we are?
Well, I think there's a passion in this marketplace for the sport. There are more fans. 40,000 people tickets already sold to our home opener illustrates that. There's a long history of the sport here and production of talented players, national team stars. So there's an understanding of the marketing value that these players generate.
Yeah. And I mean, didn't you set some kind of record in sponsorship sales for the club? This is separate from ad sales. This is sponsorship. It's different, right, Rob?
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm extremely proud of our team because we have exceeded all expectations by any measurement. So we have by far the largest number of season ticket deposits. We sold our season tickets out faster than any other team. The 40,000, we're going to break the all-time attendance record. And then when we get to the sponsorship side, we're breaking records in terms of, the sponsorship dollars. So our Performance Center sponsorship deal that we did, which is to sponsor the Performance Center, is the largest deal ever done in the NWSL, larger than any deal ever done in the WNBA, larger than any deal ever done for the men's league in the MLS, and it's above the average for the NBA and above the average for the NFL.
Wow.
So when you think about that, there are 16 NFL teams who are getting less money for their Performance Center than we are. And it just goes to show that the model that sponsors are willing to step up. They recognize that, 80% of the buying decisions in the United States are made by women.
You know, it does seem that you've sort of caught something, like the timing of supporting professional women's sports, that there's an attractiveness to it, that it didn't exist 20 years ago. It just, something happened, right? It seems like a switch got flipped.
Well, it's back to what I said before, and it's not that people just realized that they were there, but they recognized the quality of the play and the professionalism of the athletes and the quality of the product. And part of our goal is also to make the fan experience amazing.
I want to talk about that, but it does seem that there's a cultural mindset shift towards interest in women's sports, and it's not a gradual thing, but a quick thing. That's just like, Kurt, you're nodding.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that it's quick. I've coached women, girls, back in the 90s. My friends were girls soccer players. So I think this is an evolution. you know, not necessarily a revolution.
You don't think it's accelerated?
Oh, I think it's absolutely accelerated. But I think it's just, it's very evolutionary. I think Title IX, we look back at that. I think that's a moment in time that spurred some of this. That's 50 plus years ago.
Yeah. Now, I want to talk about, well, first of all, I better thank sponsors because I'll get into this and I'll forget. But you are listening to ProCo 360, named Best Colorado Business Podcast since 2021. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. This is the podcast for people who love Colorado and the stories of Colorado businesses and entrepreneurs. My guests today are Rob Cohen and Kurt Johnson of the Denver Summit Football Club. I want to thank a couple of great sponsors, Via Technologies. They host ProCo 360, and they do a ton of work to help me manage the technology around the website. They are a company, Via Technologies, that attracts super smart companies as clients, and then they collaborate with them to help grow their business using digital media, advertising, and so forth. Also, my friends at Denver Ventures, you may know them as Denver Angels in the past, but they've changed their name to Denver Ventures as they've grown and expanded. And we feature with Denver Ventures. We partner with Denver Ventures to feature great Colorado companies. And there are some great past episodes on ProCo 360 that we've done in collaboration with my friends at Denver Ventures. So I want to talk about building enthusiasm and in the marketplace, because it's hard to tell sometimes whether you're building short-term enthusiasm, like there's going to be 40,000 people at the opening because like no one wants to miss it, versus long-term fan base. And Kurt, you're not like, how do you know what you're doing, and can you convert early enthusiasm into long-term customer base? How do you do that?
Well, I think the most positive sign that I've seen is the commitment to season tickets. You know, we've sold out of season tickets. We have a waiting list for season tickets. That is it illustrates your question, that commitment to multiple games, to a full season. It's not just the home opener, which, by the way, is going to be fantastic and break all the records, but this commitment to coming to games week in and week out and supporting the team over the long haul.
Yeah. Well, I wonder too, do you have thoughts about, okay, people are going to get season tickets. The product, I assume, is going to be great because of the way you guys want to run this club, Kurt in particular. Have you seen a women's sports any decline over time as the energy wears down? Or do you think, I mean, how do you manage that engagement with fans?
Well, you might get two different answers from both of us, but we're absolutely aligned in this. I mean, I think what I would say is there are two components that build fan enthusiasm. One is the quality play on the field. And so Kurt and I have talked about this from day one, and we're 100% aligned on this. We're in it to win it every single year. If you don't have that mindset, you shouldn't be in professional sports. It doesn't mean that we will. Injuries happen. Weird bounces happen. Things happen in sports. They're kind of a microcosm of life. But we're going to, you know, put a product on the field that the fans can be excited about and can watch and et cetera. And then I think what you have to do is you have to make the fan experience when they come to the venue something special that they want to come back to. And that's regardless of win and losing. That's about their experience of how they get to the stadium, what they do while they're there, what they do post game, and how they get out of the stadium area. And so we're trying to think through that experience from the moment they get in their car on light rail on their bike or however they're going to get there to the moment that they get back home.
Yeah. You know, I wonder about that because there's a lot of talk around the Colorado Rockies and that fans don't go there for the games. They go there for the ambiance, the field experience and so forth. And I've got my brother-in-law from New York who's like, the Rockies will never win because the fans don't demand it. They show up anyway. So how do you balance fans that go because they want to be fans of the game versus families who go because they want the vibe? And can you even manage that?
Well, I think that Rob's point about the experience. It's not an experience for just the diehard soccer experts. It's not just an experience for families with young kids. It's an experience for all of them. When you know you've got something, all of them are walking out of the stadium feeling like they had an incredible time. Yeah.
And it's paying attention to the little details. So it's like making sure the young professionals have an area like the Rockies have in the rooftop where mm-hmm. we have plazas where they can stand and talk and watch the game at the same time. But they're there, you know, I've heard young people say, you know, they look at their ticket to the Rockies as kind of a cover charge to a bar, and they're, you know, they're going there to have fun, which is a completely different experience between a family that's going there, and you do the little things like drop-offs for family, stroller parking, play areas for the kids.
You're doing that kind of stuff?
We're thinking through all that, mm-hmm, even with our mm-hmm. concessionaires of saying, you know, let's have a PBJ sandwich or something like that that people can buy because they don't want to spend $20 for chicken nuggets for their kids when they're not going to eat them. Just trying to think through that experience so that when people come, they're like, that was awesome and I want to go again.
Yeah. So, Kurt, I should have probably started earlier in this conversation, but like, what does a GM do?
Well, over the last 9 months or so, I've been the chief recruiter, you know?
In player recruiter?
Recruiter of coaches, support staff, sporting staff, and players, yeah. So I have on my board, when things get kind of overwhelming or we are looking at how much work we have instead of how much we've accomplished, I look up at my board and it's 51 great, talented people that are going to help us win games. And so it's all about the people. And we're right at the 51 number, getting there. And that's what it's all about.
Wow. So I read in your bio that you sort of talk about leadership. And how do you, like when you guys talk, Rob, you lead a big financial services company. Kurt, you lead a sports team. Like, where do those things cross over and where you really have to be different in how you think about this?
Well, I think it crosses over in lots of places. I mean, at the end of the day, it's about culture. I don't care what kind of organization you have. It all starts with culture and it all starts with an alignment of values. And so when Kurt and I were talking about him taking this job, we spent as much time talking about values and vision and what you want to do as opposed to experience and how are you going to find the 51 people, which is 26 players and 25 coaches and performance people, et cetera. And you know, when you have alignment in those values and you want to do the same thing, there's immense crossover. With that said, running a financial service company and a professional sports team has nothing in common, you know, other than the common sense business part of it.
Yeah, but Kurt, have you had to turn to Rob and say, like, no, that's not, your idea worked at IMA, but it's not going to work here?
Not at all. No.
No?
No, we've aligned on the way to build this and the recruitment of talent and the desire to win right away, yet respecting the league and knowing it's not going to be that easy.
Yeah. So, Rob, you've been running a company for a long time and really successfully. Have you learned any management lessons from talking with Kurt about building a soccer team?
Sure. I mean, hopefully you're learning from everybody around you your whole life and you're a lifelong learner. And so, you know, I mean, I knew this before working with Kurt, but, you know, it's that concept of hiring incredibly talented people, giving them the resources, the tools they need. And then, you know, as I like to affectionately say, getting the hell out of their way.
Yeah.
And I never, you know, I remember very clearly early in our relationship, Kurt came to me and said, I want to sign this player and I want to send over the contract and want you to review it. And I said, I don't need to look at the contract. And he goes, what do you mean? I go, you got a salary cap. You know, you got the mechanisms. You know the players. If you think I'm going to make decisions about how much we should pay a player, that's not my core competency. That's yours. And since that day, he's taken the ball and run with it. And so You know, it's reinforced that concept of hiring great people and getting the heck out of their way.
Yeah. Kurt, do you remember the story the same way?
Oh, yeah. 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 And I was pleased, you know, and it was completely in line with the conversations we had during the hiring process and what I had seen from afar as it relates to Rob and the ownership group. It was about getting stuff done as opposed to talking about it and pounding your chest over what we're going to do.
So does that... Obviously, you couldn't disclose what you paid, so I don't expect you to really answer this question, but does it seem like you're doing things differently from the established teams in the league?
100%.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. I mean, I've worked for other teams in the league and had fantastic experiences, but the level of investment in every way here is higher than most of the teams in the league. And that's not to say that other teams in the league aren't being invested in. It just says that this is leading the way. We are leading the way in a commitment to providing an incredible workplace for our employees, players, coaches, sporting staff, front office, as well as a commitment to soccer fans that what they're going to see here is of a world-class level.
Do you anticipate making enough money at this to sustain exactly what you just described?
I tell everyone that's the big bet. And no, it is, you know, but that's business, right? I mean, you gather your information, you make the assumptions that you have, you build your models, and then at the end of the day, it's execution risk to get that done. And so, as Kurt said, we're making the largest investment ever made in women's sports anywhere in the world. And I often say to people, let that sink in for a moment. That's the largest investment ever made in women's sports anywhere in the world. And what we now have to go out and prove is that, you know, we already talked about the Performance Center sponsorship, but now we got to do pouring rights at the stadium, naming rights at the stadium, front of kit, back of kit, arms, you know, all of those things that, you know, would prove the financial model out. And it's all execution risk now. Wow. Because we've built the models. We believe that in the long run, it's going to pay off, but nobody's ever really done what we're proposing and trying to do.
Does that scare you at all?
Hell yeah. But that's, but you know what? When I started, you know, when you start businesses, you're scared too. And, you know, that's part of, you know, that's part of what drives, you know, if you really talk to most entrepreneurs, they will tell you, you know, what drove them to success. A lot of them will say fear of failure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's a great motivation. And what I really love is like our ownership group, our motto was kind of, let's prove them wrong. Let's prove them that we can, invest these kind of dollars and get the results. What I really love is the staff independent to us came back and their mission statement is to prove them right. Meaning they want to prove the ownership group is right. That's in the cool. investment that we're making. And so that creates incredible alignment, between the sporting staff, the business staff, and the ownership group. We're all aligned to trying to do the same thing.
That's cool. Kurt, do you talk about those kind of things during the day with your team?
We do. Yeah. We talk about ways of working, culture, the environment that we want our players to have on a day-to-day basis. You know, I think that's an important talking point and reality in women's sports is historically, they haven't had great development environments. Their uniforms have been men's. Their facilities have been men's. The marketing has been lacking. The investment has been lacking. And so the dynamic of the reality of that world that is now evolving is that we do talk about those things far more than any men's team I've been involved in. It is a cultural phenomenon. And something that, you know, the players are builders of the game. They understand that there's a role in their job, in their playing time to build the game, leave it better than, you know, for those that come after it.
Do they also see their role as, like, do the players you're recruiting, and I notice you're really promoting Colorado-grown players and other players that are particularly skilled and so on. But, I mean, do they... do they see their role as helping you win? Not just win games, but helping you prove this model?
100%. Yeah. And we're actively seeking those that want to be builders, is the word that we use. It's not hard. I think almost every soccer player out there that is in the NWSL has had a conversation or has a belief around building the game. It's just part of the DNA of proving the naysayers wrong.
Yeah. And I think the women on our team, you know, I've been blessed to be around the women, and they're incredible human beings. That they're amazing athletes, but equally incredibly human beings. And they too want to elevate the sport. They want to elevate the experience. They want to be trailblazers for those that will follow in their footsteps and make it better for the next generation. Yeah. And that's really cool. Mm.
So there must have, I mean, you've never paid or bought an expansion team in your career.
No.
And I don't know, Kurt, have you ever started one from scratch?
Not in this way.
What did you guys, obviously you didn't know what you're getting into entirely, but what just hit you across the head like, holy shit, we just had no idea?
Well, I tell everybody that I'm pretty sure the commissioner of the league will never ask another city to do what we've done in 12 to 14 months. To go from a standing start on January 30th of 2025 to playing our first game on March 14th, it's an incredible heavy lift. It's a startup in every way. And I joke with people like, you know, we won the bid and had an expansion fee that I had to pay, and I didn't even have a bank account for the team, you know, and people like, why didn't you create a bank account? I'm like, well, there were 19 cities. I didn't know if we were going to win. Why would I set up a bank account? And so, literally from going to a bank account to hiring Kurt, to hiring Jen, to hiring a coach, to now having 20 plus players, soon to have 26 on the roster, you know, to do the infrastructure, to build the performance. You know, like I tell people, January 30th, we didn't have a team. We're going to open our performance center in May. Mm-hmm. So we had to design it, get it through permitting, cut a deal with the city, get construction underway, open it. We're building 8 fields out there with a temporary stadium. All that's going to be open by July. That is an incredibly heavy lift that I don't know any team that's done, men's or women, in a 12 to 14 month period of time.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I think everything in life is relative to what your past experiences are. And there certainly the timeline has been challenging in my particular role and that type of thing. But we have more resources here, more excitement, more people want to be a part of this. This is a job that anyone would want. I've been worked in professional soccer for 30 years, and most of that as a general manager. And, you know, this project what's the right way to say it? We just have more here to sell, to attract people. And therefore, I don't look at it as being particularly difficult, certainly challenging. And, we have a lot of work to do, but I think that we're in a great position to be successful.
I don't hear much doubt. Like, I would think either of you, especially Rob, would wake up in the middle of the night in a cold sweat. But I just don't hear.
I have on many nights. That's the entrepreneur business startup experience, right? Anybody who's ever done that, started something from scratch, if you don't wake up every once in a while going, you know, A, what have I done? And B, how am I going to do it? And et cetera. But at the same time, when you have other people that you're locking arms with and you get up and you look them in the eye and you realize they're counting on me, I'm counting on them, we're in it together. They're not going to leave me, I'm not going to leave them. That's what keeps you moving. You know, it's just like anything, put one foot in front of the other and next thing you'll be surprised where you get to.
So Kurt, what are we going to see in the first game?
I think you're going to see a team that, first of all, is excited to play in that particular game, respects the moment, you know, and is going to be incredibly excited. On the field, I think you're going to see a team that's well-balanced, well-coached, even though they haven't played in a meaningful game like this ever before as a group. I think it's going to be one that's up for the challenge and excited to represent Denver and Colorado.
I would think the fans are going to be buzzing. I would just think it'll be great.
100%.
We're looking forward to it. We wish our first game was at home instead of on the road. We're starting the season with three road games, which is a challenge. Three of the four teams we play in the first four games have all been in the championship game in the last two seasons. So two of them have won the championship, and the other team played in both championship games and lost. So we're playing three of the best teams in the league in the first four games, but we're up for the challenge.
Well, that's cool. I mean, at least the team will have played together before they play in front of home fans. So
that's
there's
true.
That, right?
That's
so,
true.
So, hey, let's wrap up on that. This is going to be, and the first game is?
March 14th is the first game. First home game is March 28th at Empower Field at noon. It's going to be nationally televised, but we want to sell out the stadium. We're at 40,000. We got room for 36,000 more of you to come out and join us. It's going to be an extremely special day. Come be a part of history. If we get 76,000 people in that building, we're going to set a record that will never be broken.
Oh, wow. That would just send chills down your spine, wouldn't it?
It would. But being more there, importantly than me, that would send such a statement to the players and the women on the field when they come out and saw that stadium full. And when you talk about empowering women, I can't think of a more powerful moment.
Wow. Well, let's wrap on that. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. Today on ProCo 360, you've been listening to my conversation with Rob Cohen of the Denver Summit and Kirk Johnson, general manager. Gentlemen, wow, great having you on ProCo 360. Thanks for this.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Listeners, glad you're here on ProCo 360, where we say live, work, love Colorado, because you and I and my guests can be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. You make the show successful by subscribing to the ProCo 360 podcast. If you haven't yet, it's a huge help if you submit a review in your app. Thanks again to show sponsors, Denver Ventures and Via Technologies. That's the show, live, work, love Colorado, and the Denver Summit Football Club. So, wow, that would be cool if you could fill that stadium.
We would love it.
I think you will.
Well, we got to keep this. I don't want to keep this weather going. I want a little snow, but our big fear is we're going to have 60 degree weather all winter, and then we're going to have the blizzard of the century on March 28th. But
that would suck.
That would suck. But we'll play the game.
Yep. All right. Well, guys, thanks.
Thank you.
Let's call it a wrap.